ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. It's an election year and a lot is going on. A pandemic, an economic crisis, a civil rights movement, and that's just the last 6 months. So what matters to young consumers? What do they expect from brands? Do they want them involved? And if so, how? Are there any no-go areas? YPulse, the leading authority on Gen Z and millennial opinions and behaviors, has just released a new trend report on how young consumers are thinking about the election, activism, and how brands fit in. Mary Lee Bliss, YPulse's VP of Content, who oversees all of YPulse's syndicated products, which includes newsletters, insight articles, and over 60 annual reports and ongoing surveys, is our guest today. She's here to discuss what YPulse's research can tell us about activism and the young consumer. Mary Lee, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. So excited to talk through this new trend.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. But before we dig in, can you give us a quick overview of the methodology, number of people surveyed, margin of error, just to catch people up with YPulse?
Yeah, absolutely. So YPulse is constantly interviewing young consumers 13 to 39 in the U.S., and each one of our reports is based off a survey of 1,000 young consumers of that age range. That's a nationally representative survey, and it's always fielded just a few weeks before the report comes out, so it's near to real-time data.
Fantastic. So digging into this particular trend report, one of the things that you looked at was the underpinning of the young consumers' activism, specifically their assessment of the system's ability to handle their concerns, or if the system was even designed to hear their concerns. Mm-hmm. How broad was the feeling that things weren't structured for them?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Young consumers for have some time been telling us that politics doesn't feel like it's designed for them, or the systems that are in place feel too extreme, or politicians don't focus on the issues they care about, which when we last asked for this survey, 70% agreed with. And Democrats are, of course, right now more likely to feel that way than Republicans. But it is something that we've been hearing for some time. And what we really have, kind of assessed is that while COVID provided, this bubble where young consumers had more focus on the injustices that were really, have been put in a spotlight because of the pandemic, the underlying circumstances, obviously, of their discontent have been around for a long time. This is not coming out of the blue. So, you hear questions about, why are they protesting? Why now? And there's, of course, a lot of reasons that this moment in time there's a spark to push young people out to stand up for what they believe in, literally in the streets. But that underlying feeling of not being heard, of the system not taking care of them, or not feeling like the issues that they care about, gun control, climate change, racism, student loan debt, all of these things are being addressed. That's been really a long-term thing for millennials and now Gen Z.
Well, it's interesting. I was just thinking that the system, in quotes, mm-hmm. is actually broader even than politics. I was actually thinking about school debt, and that for Gen X, sometimes there's a misunderstanding. There's I had school debt. I dealt with it. But it's the degree of debt, which
Absolutely.
When you dig in, it's really so burdensome that it actually has knock-on effects to other parts of the economy, ability to buy houses, ability to do various things. So one of the things, younger generations are regularly criticized. We've talked about this, how younger generations are often criticized. And how does that criticism feed into this? And how responsible or empowered does this make Gen Z and millennials feel?
Well, I don't know that the criticism necessarily feeds into it. They're not, you know, protesting because they've been criticized by any means. But what we have seen, which is really interesting, is a kind of lessening of self-criticism among young consumers. Because, you know, when you see literally, you know, Time magazines calling you the me generation, and headlines saying how, you know, you all think you're snowflakes and all of these things for so many years, you know, we've heard from millennials for some time that they don't even want to be called millennials. They don't see themselves as part of that generation because all those bad things have to be about, you know, someone else. And, you know, there's been a lot of that kind of attitude about political correctness, that, you know, young people are too sensitive and they create issues out of nothing. And for some time, you know, young consumers actually agreed with that, or the majority of them did. And what we have seen is that now we see some of those feelings really lessening in degree. So back in 2018, when we asked if their generation is too politically correct, 57% of young consumers agreed, over half. Now that's down to 47. Still, you know, a significant amount, but definitely a drop. And what we've really kind of come away with is that they're starting to feel like, no, it's not that I'm too sensitive. It's that the world is not matching up with my beliefs and other people need to do some catching up. You know, I'm not being too sensitive. I'm not being too politically correct. It's that the world is actually unjust and I should be voicing these things. So it's really more of a rejection of criticisms of their generation. And they do really see their generations, Gen Z and millennials, as the ones that will actively make the world a better place. 61% agree that their generation is actively making the world a better place and more inclusive for everyone. And a lot of, you know, political correctness in their minds, when we've dug into this, we have an entire trend that we dug into political correctness a few years ago. You know, it really is a lot of it about trying to make the world a more inclusive place and not to offend groups or to leave, you know, groups out of the larger discourse. So I think they want the world to catch up with them now.
It's interesting. I've noticed, even within these cohorts, I've noticed a difference between Gen Z and millennials. I mean, completely anecdotal, non-scientific sample. But what I witness on the ground is Gen Z seems to be more in real life activists, specifically with regard to gun violence, really active, that they've been activated. Now, is that consistent with data or is that not consistent with the data?
Well, we do have the scientific data to actually look at it, well, which is great. Yeah. I will say, first and foremost, millennials really did get a bad rap for being apathetic. And, you know, we wrote actually some years ago a trend called Activated, really looking at a lot of the protests and movements that millennials were taking part in and leading. And so they've gotten kind of this reputation of being slacktivists, you know. But we've seen that they are actually feeling empowered to make change and trying to make change for some time. Now, Gen Z has kind of grown up with that being their mentality the whole time. So we see more with Gen Z, more action and slightly more kind of a belief that they care about issues of today, that they're going to make positive changes in the world. Now it's the majority of both groups, but just a little bit stronger in Gen Z. And what I will say is that right now, Gen Z is certainly at the center of a lot of the young activist groups that have been founded and are really leading these, you know, massive protests and movements, you know, from their living rooms, their bedrooms, because, you know, they've been quarantined, but they're organizing in such, of course, digitally savvy ways. And so, you know, they've really, I think one of Gen Z's superpowers is really their connectivity and their just preternatural ability to use social media to amplify everything that they do. And it's, they're really, you know, wielding it as quite a weapon for change.
Well, it's interesting because I've often wondered about, and perhaps this is at the root of some of the criticism with the millennial piece, was that it was digital activism as opposed to on the street in real life activism. And that, you know, tick the box, I'm going to emotionally feel that I've done something, but did it make that much of a difference? And then now people are isolated and digital activism is kind of very central to having activism. How do hashtags function as a part of digital activism? That's one of the things hashtagism. I don't know. I think of like, what is it? Kony 2020, ineffective, jump on it bandwagon, but it seems like hashtags have evolved. Right. Is that true?
Well, I would say this first off, that young consumers have always believed that they can make change online, and hashtags have been a part of that. They're one piece of digital activism of a larger, you know, kind of organization around an issue. And it is a way for them to organize and spread awareness. And by, you know, having all of the information, I mean, Instagram, especially now, and all platforms have really become these stages for political change and for political education. You know, these are the spaces that young consumers are going to learn about new issues and issues that they care about and want to see changes in. And this is where they're meeting others. And, you know, organizing together. So, you know, the protests of this year have, of course, you know, been all over the news and making so many headlines. But what's helping to underpin that in the street activity is a lot of what's going on online. And, you know, the Black Lives Matter hashtag is a great example of that. When Blackout Tuesday happened in June of this year. And just, you know, to refresh readers' memories in case they missed it or don't remember, because there have been a lot of hashtags this year. This was when everyone was posting black boxes under Blackout Tuesday in support of the Black Lives Matter movement. But what people were also doing was including the Black Lives Matter hashtag with their black squares. So when you looked at the hashtag content for Black Lives Matter, it was all black squares. But there was a huge backlash to Blackout Tuesday because that hashtag was being used to share information, to share videos of the protests, to share information about where the protests were going on, to expose police activity when, you know, protesters were being unfairly arrested, or, you know, there was a lot going on under there, and that, you know, being flooded with black squares for a day, it did, of course, that backlash worked, and it was quickly suggested to delete Black Lives Matter on all of those, and all the information again, you know, started to flow again. But that pause was, you know, really indicative of how important hashtags are for young people.
Also, I would think that it serves as a warning shot for brands who are using a hashtag to be careful how they use it so that they don't get accused of co-opting a hashtag.
Absolutely. Throwing a hashtag out in support of a movement is absolutely not enough.
Right.
You know, when brands, and we've spoken quite a lot about this over the course of the last 6 months, the correct way and the way that young people want brands to be involved in causes and in change is far more than a post that says, I support this, and the hashtag to kind of jump on the bandwagon. They want brands to put their money where their mouth is, and even more to make real changes within their organizations that show that they are a part of making progress and not just, you know, kind of serving a vocal support without anything behind it.
Well, and that I thought that was interesting that in the report, you know, this has obviously been a year of spectacular change, and the expectations with regard to brand behavior, the power of the purse, and that the young people are actively seeking brands that support causes, and they're actively avoiding brands that oppose their causes. Right. And I thought that was interesting. And also, they were, how many of them are actually conducting the research? It's not just hearsay that they are, that that is part of their journey to purchase, if you will, that mm-hmm. they are evaluating a brand, what it is, they're looking at reviews, but then they are also, as part of that evaluation, looking at their stance. Is that true?
Yes. Half of Gen Z and 6 in 10 millennials tell us that they look up a brand stance on the causes that they support before making purchases. And, you know, young consumers do seek out brands that align with their viewpoints. They want brands to get involved in social causes. And part of the reasons they want them to be vocal about the social causes they're involved with is so that they can more clearly make decisions when they're at the shelf, or more accurately online, clicking to buy, to support those brands that do align with their personal views.
And how about cancel culture? That's become a hot button in conversation, political conversation. Yeah. Is it not just that they're seeking for themselves, but then they are seeking to influence others? Is that true or not? It's been blown out of proportion. Where do things land there?
Well, I think, you know, cancel culture has, you know, had a lot of activity this year. There's certainly been a lot of moments where, you know, X brand is canceled, or individuals, because of what they've said, or, you know, money that they've donated, or, you know, their icons and logos or products feature, now widely considered incredibly racist depictions of people, you know, so cancel culture has had, quite the active year. There has been, in the media, I would say, and amongst, I would also say, some celebrities, some buzz that, you know, cancel culture has gone too far, that it's a negative thing, that there should be discourse, not cancellation. But young consumers see cancel campaigns as a force for change. 52% agree that cancel culture has been effective at creating social change. And when we look specifically at race and ethnicity, that number increases to 65% of young Black people who agree that cancel culture creates social change. So, you know, you've seen hashtags taking down brands or individuals who are being, you know, hashtag canceled. And, you know, number one, this is a way that young consumers are sharing information about a brand if that brand no longer aligns with their views, or they find out something about that brand that doesn't sit well with them, that doesn't match up with their morals. That cancel culture is a way for them to share that with, you know, their many followers, because they have such huge platforms, so many of them on social media. But it's also their way of getting a brand to pay attention, that, you know, that they are paying attention to call them out and to demand change. You know, and many times it has worked.
Do you see within the young consumer cohort that specific groups are leading activism, that it starts with certain groups, or is it across the board?
Well, it absolutely depends on, you know, what issue is going on. But we have seen that, or what issue we're speaking of, but we have seen that Black and Hispanic young consumers are more likely to support online social movements and to participate in them. So, so certainly we do know that those groups are particularly active.
So let's, looking under the hood, what are the actual causes that resonate? Obviously, if we're going to have different causes resonating more strongly with different cohorts, but what, backing up, what are the actual causes that resonate?
Right. Well, they align with what young consumers say are some of the biggest issues and problems that they're facing. And it was very interesting to see this year when we asked as an open-end question, what is the biggest problem that your generation is facing? Racism was number one before COVID-19. Oh. So they see, you know, racism, racial injustice as a larger problem and plague on their generation than an actual plague. So, you know, that's huge. We have seen from the beginning that the majority of young consumers want brands to support Black Lives Matter and to support anti-racism actively, to be active allies, which means actually you have to do something. You have to lay out a plan to make change within your organization or, you know, and to support financially. Those are certainly huge issues for young consumers. They also, though, of course, you know, being in the middle of a pandemic, do appreciate brands when they support things like young consumers or consumers wearing masks, the safety of consumers. They, you know, when we look at the issues that they're thinking about for this upcoming election, the economy and education, those are third and fourth after COVID-19 and Black Lives Matter. So those are kind of the biggest issues. And when we talk about the economy, obviously there's a lot underneath that. And they're thinking about all of these things as they go to the voting booths this fall. Every election is historic, but I don't know that there has been an election in recent memory where young people are bringing so many intense feelings into voting with them. They want brands to be involved in the causes that matter to them. So it's both a political issue, but also, you know, what brands need to understand as well.
Well, one of the things, you've covered a lot there. So one of the things backing up a little bit, I wanted to ask about is just political activism, really in terms of electoral political activism, in that every election cycle, it seems like we hear, oh, the young people, they're going to come out and the whole election, it's going to change. And yet then on election day, it doesn't seem to materialize. Are you seeing a greater number? I mean, you do these surveys election year, so you can somewhat compare in terms of registration and indications of likeliness to vote. Has it gone up or is it stable?
It's stable, which, you know, is interesting and makes things unpredictable.
Right. Well, of course. Yeah.
So, you know, 82% of young consumers who are 17 plus, so, you know, could be 18 by the time the election goes around, are registered to vote. Huh. That's, you know, huge. So we also know that 83% of 18 plus tell us that they are likely to vote in the upcoming election. So the majority plan to vote and the majority are registered. They're ready.
Huh. But, well, that's, I mean, because I think that if that was consistent with the last election cycle in 2016,
that is not much higher than 2016. It is what we would see as near to the same. So the question is, are all of these issues that have gone on in the last 4 years, but of course the last year especially, are these now the spark that will push more to go to the polls?
Yeah, will they actually show up? Right. I think one of the other things I found very interesting in the report is that while they think the issues are important, they specifically don't want political party affiliation. So they may want to support every plank in a party's platform, but they don't want a policy. They don't want a party affiliation.
Right. It's both you know, for themselves, what we've seen is that, especially with Gen Z, they are increasingly unaffiliated with the party. 39% tell us that they are unaffiliated with a party. They don't feel they fit in with these structures, current structures. So they really define themselves as outside of the two parties. Millennials more likely to quote unquote choose a side. They're most likely to be Democrat. But there's still, you know, a large number of independent and unaffiliated. When you combine those two, it's about 35% of millennials who are either independent or unaffiliated.
Cycling back to brands, have to go back to the brands. Mm-hmm. One of the things I thought was interesting is this business about politics versus activism in general. Right. There was the Washington Post had a site takeover. The Trump campaign did a site takeover, and there was a lot of blow up around that. I don't know if you remember that mm-hmm. happening. And the conversation that I thought was interesting around this was the brand, the issue for a brand to become affiliated with a particular political party and how that might impact the feeling, especially for a news brand, of impartiality. And the conversation was, would it have mattered if it were an issue or was it purely a party? And it sounds like from all of the research that really the issue is having it be political party. It would have been equally shocking, offensive, had it been a Biden takeover.
According to YPulse's research, while young consumers want brands to support causes and for, you know, older generations, those causes might seem political and associated with a certain political party. Young consumers do not want brands to declare any allegiance to a political party or candidate. They see this as a major negative. They feel more negatively towards a brand that affiliates with a political party that they have views they don't agree with, the majority, of course, but just as important, 61% say that they dislike when brands donate to any political candidates, and a little more than half dislike when brands voice support for specific political candidates. So they want brands to speak out on issues, but to stay out of the political system.
Well, and that's so important for a brand to understand that if they're going to have advocacy, if they're going to participate, that it's issue by issue and not with the party, and also to be aware that they will be evaluated. If these young people are researching supportive causes, they're also going to become aware of political donations.
Absolutely. And some of those cancel culture campaigns that have gone on this year have been about brands that have been vocal about support for political candidates.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, in terms of Black Lives Matter, which has just been such an important movement, do you believe that this has set new standards and expectations that are going to filter down to environmentalism, or that it's because it's this big issue, this central issue, the most important issue, that it's become that complex?
We really see that standards have been reset. And young consumers expect more out of brands. And the data supports that they are more really looking for brands to speak out on big, important issues. And Black Lives Matter, you know, there was a lot of backlash in terms of, you know, brands posting empty statements. And because so many brands did participate, there was a lot of opportunity to pick apart that participation, right? But also it really made clear what young consumers want out of brand activism and corporate social good. And number one, what we see and very clearly hear from them is that words are not enough, that they need brands to clearly donate to organizations, make their internal efforts clear. But also that, you know, if you have a history of discrimination, of, you know, having a mascot that is racist. You know, many brands have come under fire for that. That your track record matters, and you need to acknowledge what you've done wrong in the past before you can voice support for that cause. So, you know, that was especially true of Black Lives Matter, but we can clearly see going forward that that could be true for many issues, including environmentalism and climate change. You know, there really are new standards, and young consumers, they really don't see many issues as off limits in terms of what brands can speak on. So going forward, we really think that they're going to expect brands to make their position known.
So it's not like in the past where you just stay mum on an issue and that's what you're supposed to do as a business. Quite the contrary, you're actually supposed to say something and take a point of view.
Yeah, and not just take a point of view though. If you're going to say something, you know, you need to have some actions to back that up.
Looking at the pretty extensive list of issues that social causes that are on the table for young people.
Sure.
Are there some causes that, you know, everybody just needs to deal with and needs to get on board with? Or can a brand say, well, our issue that we're going to care about is, I don't know, access to healthcare. And as long as we're good there, the other issues. Or are there some issues which are, they are required. Everybody must be dealing with these issues for the young people to be good with them.
Well, what we do know is that when we ask what issues are inappropriate for brands to get involved with, there's very few, and they're most likely to say that all issues are appropriate for brands to get involved in. So that's one thing that brands need to understand. While in the past, speaking out on, you know, heavier issues might have been seen as a faux pas, Gen Z and millennial consumers don't believe that it's inappropriate for brands to make statements.
Were there any that were inappropriate? Were there any, other than the political party affiliation, were there any stay away from issues?
I mean, there's a small amount of consumers who, the top one that's inappropriate is abortion and birth control. That was roughly, you know, under 25% though. And then every other issue that we asked about, and we asked about a slew of issues from, you know, the economy to gun control to Black Lives Matter, and asked, you know, which of these is inappropriate. Any other issue on that list, it was less than 20% of young consumers believed that it was inappropriate. While, you know, they were far more likely to say that all of the issues on the list were appropriate for brands to get involved in.
Were there any that were considered mandatory, or was that not something?
That's not something that we asked. I mean, I can say that with Black Lives Matter and anti-racism, you know, when the conversation gets so big, and, you know, the protests are in the news every day, and young people are looking for leaders and looking for change and looking for support that they're not feeling elsewhere, those moments, certainly it felt like it was table stakes for brands to make their stances known. And some of those stances were embraced, you know, when there were, you know, there was a history of allyship, or, you know, clear steps, progress steps forward were being laid out, you know, thinking of brands like, you know, Nike's ad. Mm-hmm. They had a history, of course, with Colin Kaepernick of being an ally and for supporting anti-racism. And so, you know, their ad was not ripped to shreds as some were. Ben and Jerry's, you know, were so clear about, you know, all the steps that they were going to take to forward anti-racism, you know, really a clear plan laid out. So, you know, there's a huge range of brands that got involved in Black Lives Matter. And while some, you know, were not embraced because of the way that they participated and the way that they stated their support, so many were, were appreciated. And when the conversation is so huge like that, and these huge issues that young consumers feel they are facing as the biggest challenges of their generation, COVID-19, racism, debt, climate change, you know, these massive things, they believe their lives are at stake. And so it's difficult to say that there's not a place for brands who have huge platforms, but also all the money.
Right. Of course.
To get involved. No, does every brand have to weigh in on every issue? Absolutely not, you know. But, you know, when there's, you know, this moment in time, these historic moments in time, young consumers are absolutely looking for information on what brand stances are. And so, you know, it's likely worth your while to make it clear.
Well, and I think that's the thing, is the journey to purchase involves evaluation and assessment of brands and products. And if this component of activism is part of their evaluation, and if they're online and it's relatively easy for them to do, you know, they're going to look at reviews, they're going to look at other people's experience, they're going to look at price, and they're also going to look at activism. And so for a brand, if they are active, make it easy to find out how and make it real, you know, so that it's not going to come back to bite them. Well, this has been great and so interesting. So I want to thank you for your time to cover this. And I'm curious, what's the next trend report we can look forward to?
Oh, well, we're working on that right now. Again, you know, in the wake of COVID-19, what we're really kind of looking at is what are the big shifts going forward, the permanent changes that, or repercussions of what everyone is going through now. And what we're starting to look at is actually transportation for young consumers who many have moved or are thinking about a move or feeling trapped where they are. Many working at home, the majority of millennials who are employed are working from home. So changes in their commutes, changes in their lifestyle overall. So we're really putting that under a lens and seeing, you know, what that means going forward for the transportation industry and for young consumers' preferences.
That's fascinating. It's going to be so interesting because, of course, transportation, that commuting time, links directly with media consumption, with radio. So if people aren't commuting, are they listening to the radio or are they doing other things? If they have all of a sudden this extra time available to them, also in terms of transportation, are they using rideshare services or not if they're leaving urban areas and purchasing cars? So I look forward to that report. Can't wait to read it. Thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking my production team at Up Next, my friend Rob Naughton, the voice artist who recorded our open, and of course, all of you, the members of our audience. Thank you. I'll be talking to you again next time right here on Up Next.